If you have your Bibles, turn to 2 Kings chapter 4. 2 Kings chapter 4. Caleb is going to read 2 Kings 4, 25 through 31. Christian, you want to read Matthew 10, verse 8. Andy, 2 Kings 4:29, that'll be the first time. Ken, 2 Kings 4:29, that'll be the second time. Harvey, 2 Kings 4:31. Dwayne, Proverbs 20, verse 5. A couple more. Corey, Matthew 17:19. And Jake, 1 Peter 5:5. Okay, we started. We're going to be working right through the life of Elisha. And we're studying the issue of leadership. And we see Elisha's interaction with men. So we're looking at it from two angles. In this story, we have two angles. It's what he teaches, and it's what his disciple does in response to what would be, in effect, his pastor is trying to teach. So in the story that we're going to read is, this is the story of trying to teach a disciple how to be effective or how to have a miracle dimension, which is a very important issue. We're going to talk about instruction and development. 2 Kings 4, 25 through 31.
And so she departed and went to the man of God at Mount Carmel. So it was when the man of God saw her afar off, he said to his servant Gehazi, "Look, the Shunammite woman, please run now to meet her and say to her, 'Is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child?' And she answered, 'It is well.' Now when she came to the man of God at the hill, she caught him by the feet, but Gehazi came near to push her away. But the man of God said, 'Let her alone, for her soul is in deep distress, and the Lord has hidden it from me and has not told me.' So she said, 'Did I ask a son of my Lord? Did I not say, "Do not deceive me"? Then he said to Gehazi, 'Get yourself ready and take my staff in your hand and be on your way. If you meet anyone, do not greet him. And if anyone greets you, do not answer him, but lay my staff on the face of the child.' And the mother of the child said, 'As the Lord lives and as your soul lives, I will not leave you.' So he arose and followed her. Now Gehazi went on ahead of them and laid the staff on the face of the child, but there was neither voice nor hearing. Therefore he went back to meet him and told him, saying, 'The child has not awakened.'"
Okay, so instruction and development is what we're going to talk about today. So let's talk about instruction. I don't know if you understand that there are different ideas about how to train men, how to make disciples. And there are some pastors that their idea is actually to teach nothing. To not teach how to put together sermons and not teach how to pray for the sick or other things, because the idea is I had to work it out for myself, so you work it out for yourself. And so I believe that approach is actually unbiblical. So in Matthew 10, verse 8, it gives us a principle of discipleship.
"Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out demons. Freely you have received, freely give."
Okay, so he's talking about what they're going to do, but the principle is, freely you have received, freely give. In other words, you are going to give out of what I have put into you. And that is actually what discipleship is. In the scripture we're going to read here, or we did read, we see that disciples need clear instructions. 2 Kings 4, 29.
"Then he said to Gehazi, 'Get yourself ready and take my staff in your hand and be on your way. If you meet anyone, do not greet him. And if anyone greets you, do not answer him, but lay my staff on the face of the child.'"
Okay, so in that one verse, if you take this apart, you see there are a number of specific instructions in how to get a miracle. He tells him the principle of urgency, how important this is. Priority, what you do more than Anything else? There's authority. How are you going to do this? Is because I'm giving you authority. There's practical instruction. How's this going to happen? By laying the staff on the boy's face. So those are. He doesn't just simply say, "Hey, you know, you got a problem, then work it out for yourself." By golly, that's what I did. Pulled myself up by my bootstraps. But he gives instructions. So this is actually discipleship, and you have to understand there are two sides to discipleship. There is an element that you have to get it for yourself. Doesn't matter how much instruction and learning that you have, it is on you to press in and to make it real. It's on you, as we'll look at in a minute, to understand it. That is true. But we see biblically, first what happens is that there is clear instruction. Jesus' pattern of discipleship was a mixture of theology, which is the understanding about God, knowledge about God, and practical instructions, and hands-on involvement, which we'll talk about. It's all three of those together. He tells you about God and the principles overall about why you need to do this, or why will it work if you do this. And then you have some practical instructions about what should you do when faced with a certain situation. And then there's hand-on instruction as you have to do it for yourself. So this is actually what discipleship is. If you think about some of you have been coming to these classes for years. So what is it that I'm teaching you? I am teaching you things you need to know for the future that you might not be dealing with right now. It's just stuff you may run into at some point. The idea is to give you some kind of file for what you may face. Discipleship is teaching you things that you need to do right now. There is an element of things that you must be doing now. And there is an element of how to fix what's going wrong. For instance, the disciples said, "We tried to cast the demon out and it didn't work. Why couldn't we cast it out?" So Jesus gives some practical instruction. This kind comes not out but by prayer and fasting. So there's all of those things. He told them for the future of what they may face. He told them right now how they needed to prioritize life, or how they needed to treat their fellow disciples and other people, and how to fix problems. So instruction forms reference points. As Jesse Morales, it escapes me now the exact situation, but he said that he was faced with a problem or a sickness or whatever it was. But he said something interesting. He said when they're bringing the problem to him, he said, "I heard your voice in my head." So in other words, I had talked about the situation that he was facing. So he said, "This is what you need to do in that situation." So first of all, we see in our story is the principle of instruction. I'm telling you this because someday you will need to, or right now in different ways, you will need to be instructing other people. Second principle we see in our story is the principle of delegation. A man that has been trained must have opportunities. And that is what we're reading in the story, is that it is not enough. We are, in our fellowship, we do not make pastors or men of God only by book learning, only by instruction. Take X number of hours, take these tests, you're qualified, put this certificate on the wall, you're a man of God. Because you can have all of the book learning in the world, but it has to be tested in real life. 2 Kings 4:29.
Then he said to Gehazi, "Get yourself ready and take my staff in your hand and be on your way. If you meet anyone, do not greet him. And if anyone greets you, do not answer him, but lay my staff on the face of the child."
Okay, this is a very serious situation. this boy is dead. Right? I mean, I would say you need a pretty healthy dimension of God. Death requires a pretty healthy dimension. I mean, that's not like I've got a cold. And so you look wisely and say, you know what, in 2 weeks, it'll be all better. Thank you. This is very serious. So what does he do is he allows his disciple to go try this. So, in allowing men to have opportunities, there are risks. And the simple risk that we see here is that it is possible they might not do it right. So he goes, and this is not a story of success from Gehazi's part. He goes, he follows the instructions apparently to the letter of the law, and nothing happens. And yet, Elisha allowed it anyway. Don't you think that Elisha would have had a fair idea that that was a possibility? You don't think that Elisha was like totally shocked, like, that's incredible, I've never heard of anybody failing. Is he knew that that would happen. Jesus allowed the disciples opportunities, even though sometimes they didn't handle it right. So, that shows us, if you are going to train men, you cannot micromanage. Macro is big picture. Micro is on this level. This week, true story, is up to the date, up to the minute complaint. A guy has been struggling to build a church, and what he keeps telling me is these people won't help. These people won't help. Like there's something wrong with them, that they're lazy or defective in some way. But now I'm getting the other side of the story, and what the people say is every time he says, I need some help, and they come and help, then they say he stands there and criticizes and yells at them because they're not doing it good enough. That's what we call micromanaging. Here's a task, now I'm going to stand and watch you every second of the day to see whether you do it right. That is not what Elisha gives the instructions, he gives an opportunity, and he says, you go do it. Let's see what happens. So that is that's important. So why do you suppose that someone would be tempted to micromanage or look over their shoulder every moment versus giving the opportunity? David?
They don't want the people to make it work, okay?
Okay. And that's exactly right. It's about your ego. So if someone does it wrong, how they interpret that is you're making me look bad. So this is the important issue is in training men or disciples, they have to be given the opportunity to minister, and you have to trust them with important tasks. I don't think I gave this John 4:2. I don't think I gave that, but it's very simply it just says Jesus himself did not baptize but his disciples. So that is not just one task. What we see is that Jesus had opportunities that he allowed the disciples to step into. He allowed them to operate, connect with people, try and ministry and function, even though we see at times they came to wrong conclusions, or like Gehazi or the casting out of the demon, it wasn't a success. So training men is not an unbroken string of success. I don't know if you learn this. I have done some really dumb things in life, and I learned. I've got my butt kicked in life very severely, and I learned. And I've had some success, and I learned. So it's all good in the end. Our fear is that the only thing we can have is success, 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 which actually is not good for us. So, okay, third principle now. We shift to Gehazi. So this is Elisha. What he does, he instructs, he gives, he delegates. So let's talk thirdly about after a fall. So here's from Gehazi's perspective. So, you have been instructed as a disciple. You've been given opportunity. And so now we have in the story, there's a power failure. It didn't go well. So, 2 Kings 4:31.
Now Gehazi went on ahead of them and laid the staff on the face of the child, but there was neither voice nor hearing. Therefore he went back to the meeting and told them, saying, the child has not awakened.
Okay. So on Gehazi's part, he went, he advertised, they had been announcing this in the services for weeks. Special miracle crusade with Gehazi. If you need the information, see Gehazi. How'd it go, Gehazi? Didn't happen. Didn't work. No one got healed. I had the opportunity. I did what my pastor said, and it didn't work. So, very important here. We'll talk about Gehazi in a second. But how did Elisha respond to someone who had a failure? And this is important. So, if it's, as David said, if it's about your ego, what do? Then you say, you're finished, pal. I'm going to find me a quality disciple who doesn't have power failures. Because clearly you're just not the quality of material that I was when I was given opportunity. So, he still involved him in the process. Verse 36, he says, go call the Shunammite. So he still had a part to play in this miracle. Okay, it didn't work out the way that the way I trained you. It didn't work so well. But, so it's clear he's still trying to train Gehazi. It's not just about him. Okay, but now think about Gehazi. You've just done your big outreach. You did what your pastor said, and it didn't work. So, the response of Gehazi that is amazing to me is he doesn't ask a question. If your pastor said, if you do this, you'll get a miracle response, and you go and you lay there. What's amazing to me is that he comes back and there's like not a word. It's like he comes back like, I did it. Wouldn't you be wanting to know that you told me that and nothing? Why? Like the disciples did, why couldn't we cast it out? Why didn't the authority work? I don't get it. Wouldn't that have been a natural question? So, this becomes an important part of development. This is where all of the instruction, remember I said discipleship is instruction. That's what a man of God is supposed to do. Opportunity is the second part. But the third part that's mixed in there is your responsibility. This is what a man of God can't do for you. So Gehazi was like a lot of disciples is, he thought the point of discipleship was looking good. Yes, Elisha, Pastor Elisha, I felt a tremendous dimension of God when I was there laying the staff. But that's not what you were there for. Very impressive. Hallelujah. Yes, brother, it was fantastic. So, some men would rather look like they know what they're doing rather than find out what they need to be doing. So, really, in Gehazi, the problem here is a problem that we all have, and it's called pride. Human pride. He was apparently unwilling to humble himself and admit, hey, there apparently is something missing. What is missing? What did I do wrong? What do I need to do differently? So, if you're wanting to have miracles, Elisha at that time was the number one. He was the premier prophet, the miracle man in all the world. This guy had incredible miracles. So wouldn't you think, who would you ask about miracles? Wouldn't you ask Pastor Elisha about miracles? No. So that means then, he wasted a fantastic resource that was right near him at all times. All of the experience, all of the power, all of the wisdom that Elisha could have given was completely wasted to Gehazi. What good did Gehazi do you, Elisha? None. And the reason why is he didn't have a heart to inquire, to ask questions. Proverbs 20, verse 5.
Counsel in the heart of man is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out.
And I think I mentioned this in Wednesday's sermon. I've been in, crusades and men's meetings and conferences and different situations with Pastor Mitchell, and there are men that don't ask him a question. And as a matter of fact, I know guys that tell him all their theories, never considering your church is small and has been small since Noah got off the boat. And you're telling somebody, but you've got a new theory. That's just dumb. So, this is on you. And Pastor Mitchell doesn't reach over and slap them. Stupid, why don't you shut up and ask questions? Hey, it's on you, man. If you don't want to learn, no one can make you learn. This is volunteer. You get out of it what you put into it in some way. So this is actually a manifestation of humility. There's that word we looked last week in Sunday school, meekness, humility, being humble. You know, how do you be humble? Well, one of the simple ways that you be humble is ask questions. Because asking questions, inherent in that, not making comments, asking questions is, in you are saying, there's stuff I don't know. So, and you get guys that the fear of men, I think I mentioned this in Sunday school last week, this causes marriage problems. The number one fear of men is looking stupid. They fear that. So I get guys, I know it's probably a stupid question. In some ways, there actually are no stupid questions. If there's something you don't know, you need to know it. So therefore, it's not stupid. I would rather look foolish asking a question than be foolish pretending like Gehazi that I know the answer when it doesn't work. Who's more stupid? Definitely Gehazi. So, and we said this in discipleship, or I think it was, is questions we need to ask. And then God, His grace, gets involved with people who demonstrate humility. 1 Peter 5:5.
Likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility, for God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble.
Okay, and so humility is not a look on your face. So one of the, when it says you submit yourself to your elders, part of that is just someone who is farther down the road than you. What do I need to know? How can I do this different? Why isn't this working? And that's important, and I see that play out in ministry. That's true. The guys who struggle the most are guys who generally don't ask questions or don't stay in touch. Okay.
So, as someone who's spent a lot of time micromanaging and making sure that I don't look bad and stuff like that in situations, how do you? Because you say you can't. You have to teach people. You teach them and then you let them go, or how does that work? So, because I've done sound for a while, and so then you don't want to just say, okay, run the soundboard if they have no idea how to use it. So
yeah. So obviously there are, the first instance we see of the disciples doing anything is baptizing, right? So you perhaps don't start with somebody with, hey, there's a dead guy, go pray for the dead guy. Right? So it's a process of development.
And so in pioneering, it would be that same thing when you get a new convert, or when, you know, when they've been saved for a while and they want to get involved or something like that. You're not going to say, okay, I want you to preach right away. It's going to be little things.
Yeah, sure. First. Yeah, absolutely. Small steps.
How do you know when a new convert is ready? Take new steps in trying things, or right off the bat, you just find small things.
No. It has to. This is why discipleship is different than instruction. If it is instruction, it's simply you and you go do this. Is there has to be a hunger. They have to express desire. I don't make people, right? I don't speak to everybody in the church the same. That's important, right? Let's grab, you know, little old ladies off the, you know, Juanita Schultz is going to come in tonight, this morning. She's 98. Hey, Juanita, you're running the average Friday, okay? So there, you speak to different people differently, and obviously I'm using a great example of an older lady, but there are men in the church. I don't give them opportunities because they haven't ever expressed any interest in an opportunity.
Actually, that's kind of spurs me another thing. Somebody had once told me, you know, yeah, so-and-so was upset because he's never been asked to, none of the disciples have ever included him in doing this, or they never asked him to help with this. And I was surprised the guy even wanted to. He didn't strike me as a guy into that.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, you're dealing with human nature. You have thousands of different permutations of how people can act. So there is an element of, we're going to go, hey, why don't you come along with us? That's the element. That's how I learned to witness. Hey, Greg, come with me. And I listen to what they say. I go, oh, that's good. I like that. So there is an element of just involving people as far as in general. But we're talking now about when they're going to take responsibility. So I would never put somebody in responsibility who hasn't expressed an interest in it. Right? Yeah.
You know, because there's some people that they get deflated. You know, they have a failed experience and they deflate and then they kind of just step back. So how do we...
Yeah, and I can't. I don't have the answer to that because that's in the heart. So I don't have the exact answer. But I think overall, is how you treat people. Number one, you cannot effectively lead unless you like people. That's the important thing. It's really dumb to be in the people business if you have no love for people. So, and if you don't, discipleship, remember you heard Pastor Mitchell say it's a sincere desire to help another man achieve his destiny. So, it has to be about them, not about you, not about your ego. So, if that's true, part of that is simply how you respond to them and relate to them. Remember when I asked Josh Neal, you know, what he had learned in the time they had been here, and one of the things he said that to me was interesting was, he said, if I did something wrong, he said, you rebuked me, you told me what I did wrong, and he said, a few minutes later, you were talking to me normally, right? I hate pouting, I hate, you know, if you do something wrong, I'm not going to, for the next 3 months, look at you like, ooh. You know, that was the way I was raised. If we did something wrong, we got punished, we got spankings. It was explained why. It wasn't just out of nowhere. You know, you're eating your birthday cake and like what? we knew why we were getting punished, and then we were allowed to cry for a time, and then it was like, suck it in. You're not going to cry forever. And then my parents usually hugged us and told us they loved us. So those were powerful life lessons. So limits, you don't do certain things. Consequences, if you do certain things, you get punishment. Three, you can't pout forever. You can't just go on and on and on in life and have a mood because you got to function with other people. We had a big family. And then we still love you even if you've done something stupid. So, in essence, that is what discipleship is. So, I'm not happy when someone does something wrong, and I tell them so. But they should have a fair idea of why they're being spoken to and what they should have done differently. That's the whole point. And then you make it easier for people to recover if you can speak to them. Now, I can't, you have people that they are bundles of insecurities, they've been raised without a daddy and all kinds of things, and so they put interpretations that I never intended. So a failure is I'm a worthless human being. That's not a good message. So you try, but that ultimately is up to them. I can't fix that, so I try to help them, but I can't. You got to work it out for yourself in some way. So that's a balance. Yep.
The Shunammite woman obviously wanted nothing to do with Gehazi. So I can imagine like being in that situation that probably like Gehazi would struggle with his faith in that situation. It's like he's going to go heal the son, and she's like, I'll just wait back here with Elisha. Do you think that's something like a reputation he had earned, or just do you think he just had to deal
well,
with that?
I think it's possible. I think there's several things. Is number one, of course, people can tell who cares about them. So I think that is true. But on the other hand, from putting it from the standpoint of I have assisted as pastor on a number of different occasions, that is a basic element. You got people when you're an assistant. There's a you're not the real guy. I want to talk to the real guy. So they don't want to get prayer, counseling, etc. You know, you can't take that personally. But then. Then a crisis comes, you're able to pray, it's like, hey, it worked, okay. Or you're able to help them in a situation. So both of those are true. Probably she felt his spirit. And then it is human nature. Right? And so most of us, we would want the best chance. I would say it's pretty important. I would want the best chance of getting him healed. You know, if it was my son who died, right? So both. You're thinking, Johnny. No. Not thinking, okay. Just checking. You raised that like you were about to ask. That was why. That's dangerous. Go ahead.
So going in, we should just know, working with people, not everyone's going to bat 1,000, and of course neither are we. Just keep that in the back of our mind, you're saying. And then be able to contact you if we got issues, you know, how come this didn't work. And
Yeah. So that's now, that's later, that's... And a lot of those things are things in your head. It's crucial that you ask, because the devil plays on. I had somebody the other night that I asked them about a family situation, just being polite, chit-chat, asking about the family. And so then I went on to get my seat, and so they came up to me afterwards and said, I was about to show you some pictures of my family situation, and you just walked away. So I said, I had no idea. But it was good that they came and asked, right? Because what, you know, he said, what happens is that the devil messes my head. Like, I was deliberately, I don't care about your family. I had no idea. He was pulling out his phone to show me. So, but that's what happens in pastoring. That happens in all of life. You know, it's a puzzle to me, guys who are on the field and get a struggle and they don't call me. As though I would never have a struggle in life. That's just weird to me. But that's what happens. The devil battles you in your own head. So you have to press through some of those things. And the smaller they are now, then the easier it is, right? Before it's big. Isaac?
So besides just teaching Gehazi, I'm just trying to think of how Elisha can help Gehazi, because you said he has to want it. It has to be something in him. Is all that Elisha can do is just teach and just pray for him?
Yeah.
Because that's what has to happen, right?
Yeah.
The person, God has to
Yeah, they have to. It has to be by revelation.
Revelation.
Which is why you can't. You can't just force. That's one of the things that. You know, some guys are under the impression that every little problem in life, Pastor Mitchell and I are just calling people in the office to sort them out. Which, number one, we would be very busy guys, right? There's not enough hours in the day. But that's just not how, it has to be by revelation. You have to let God bring things in the service. You have to let God work in them. And if you try prematurely, then it is counterproductive. So yes, you have to. Revelation is the key to everything, actually. Somebody else? Any other? Yep, Mark.
In the reference that you used about the micromanager pastor, how would you change that damage?
How what?
How would you change that damage? Just got to start over?
Are you talking about something that you have done, or?
Yeah, if I was guilty of micromanaging, and then I've got a group of people, and they don't want to have anything to do with me at that point, then how would I change? What are some of the keys to bring that?
Yeah, obviously, in every human situation, I can't give the answer. I mean, you would have the extreme. I mean, obviously, there are. It depends on who it is and what the situation. There may be an extreme as far as what I've done by not giving you the opportunity has not been fair. I'm sorry. I'm going to give you more freedom to find your own way. So here, I'm here for you. I'm going to give you opportunities, and you have to do this. So. The bottom line is you have to do. On the other hand, there are guys that hurt themselves because they're constantly announcing that they're going to be different, but then they don't. So sometimes the wisest thing that you could do would just be keep your mouth shut and do the best you can to be different and pray that God helps you. That would be a better option in other cases. So I'm working on the app, Mark. If I get the people app, just every situation, you just put it in. It's like, Dwayne?
This is a question I've had for quite a while, actually. Elisha said, when he went after Naaman, went for the money and the clothing and stuff, he said, did not my spirit go with you? So part one, is that discernment of knowing his man? And so if he's got that kind of discernment for his man, which I'm sure he did, and yet he was allowed, is that almost like a revealing thing? Like he's allowing his failures to come out, hopefully fixing something he knows is there? And when does that become dangerous?
Yeah.
Did that make sense?
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. I'm just thinking of the scripture. I don't know. That'll be a few lessons ahead. I'm not sure that whether, because I haven't studied that in depth for a while. I don't remember about the did not my spirit. I'm not sure whether that is discernment. But as far as the question, I understand the question, right? Yes, there are things that I know. There are things that I know in my men that are very dangerous. Yes, and that I'm praying intently because it has the possibility of destroying them, ultimately. And sometimes I have allowed, number one is if the standard is perfection, I won't be in the ministry. So if the standard is perfection and everybody else, no one's going to be in the ministry. So you have the balance of... God can get a lot done with really flawed people. So I have to believe God. On the other hand, there are things that need to be dealt with. And so as the opportunity allows, I can speak into their life. There are men that I've had conversations with them to the extent of, I can see a lot of myself in you. You are going to destroy yourself if you don't fix this. Whether that is your marriage, your pride. And as I say, it is especially I can see it because I can see me and I know them. I know mistakes that I made. So yes, I do try to challenge them, but they don't have to, right? They don't have to listen to me. So if they don't, then ultimately it will blow up on them, you know. So in this complicated stuff, but this past week. There's three men that men that I have had dealings with and Pastor Mitchell's disciples stuff that they never dealt with, who now we are years and years and years down the road, and in the past week we're hearing about the absolute destruction that's being brought in their lives. So that's the possibility. So I think part of what you're asking is why did he let him continue knowing that he was full of greed and deception? Part of it.
Like,
yeah. So. Yeah. So you there are things that you know that are internal and you can't deal with until it's external. You can suspect that a guy is filled with pride, he's unclean, got perversion, that he's greedy, et cetera, et cetera. But it's like Elisha, you have to, you know, be praying for them, be challenging them, hoping that God gets a hold of them. But again, I don't have a heart-o-meter going, hey, pal, you're out, because I can see what's in your heart. So that is the heartbreaking thing about life, is you have to let people's decisions play out.
So the balance, protecting the congregation, trying to help them,
yeah,
is always in play, right?
Yeah, sure. And that's why it's complicated. I mean, you know, so Mark asked a question, everybody asks a question, sometimes that are just, listen, you have no idea how complicated life can be. And I'm, as a pastor, I'm juggling the need of this person, the protection of the congregation, the long-term future, development of a disciple. I'm juggling all of this at the same time. What is the best decision? We don't have a manual that I can consult on every little situation. So in overall, our thing is protecting the congregation. Sure, if there's somebody that's doing something that's wrong, I can give them a challenge. But you can be doing something wrong, but it's more on the side of stupidity. I would not treat somebody who they're doing something wrong, but what they are is filled with pride and just speaking rudely to people versus what, you know, think about the extremes that I deal with. I deal with child molesters. That's a radical difference. Sorry, I'm not playing with that. So this, you're out. I'm sorry, I can't play with that. I can't take a chance. I can't look a parent in the eye and say, yeah, I knew the guy was, he had tendencies to be a child molester, but I just want to love him. I can't do that. I'm sorry. I just can't. So those are extremes, right? So you have radical differences at all times. So you have things that, you know, this is a possibility that it can be a moral issue. This is rudeness that you're causing somebody to want to punch him in the mouth. There's just levels. How do we deal with this? So there's all kinds of different things that you have to deal with in that. Yep. Corey?
Professor, is there ever like a situation, obviously you want guys to grow, so you put them in situations where they're going to preach, do altar calls, whatever. But the fact that you're dealing with people, with souls, have you ever been in a situation where it's like, maybe it was a small outreach, turned into a huge outreach, a lot of people showed up, and you almost feel like because their best chance for seeing results would be, have you ever had to step in and be like, you know what, I'm going to have somebody more experienced preach this, or have you ever
no, God? I will not do that.
Okay.
I will not do that. Now, if a guy got up and he froze and it absolutely just wasn't even completing the, you know, couldn't even complete the altar call or something in some way, I could step in, but I would never, you're going to do this, but hey, now we have a bigger crowd, so we're going to let somebody more experienced. So, And the reason why, Corey, I have a conviction is that that guy has to learn. He must learn. So in the general, let's take this in salvation, because what guys will say is, well, it was for the souls. Really, I think it was for the guy's ego, actually. But you think about the balance, it's not that I don't care about souls. I know that I trust our people as well. Our people will deal. Even if this guy doesn't do a stellar job, it's not lost. It's not like, hey, they didn't even hear the gospel. They are burning in hell, and it's that guy's fault. Right? And you were a lousy pastor because you didn't even care about that. I know, you know, you see what I'm saying? So that is the balance. But no, I would never, hey, you're going to be doing the altar call, but it's a little bigger than I thought, so now we let somebody else do it.
Do more damage to him than any kind of gain you would get, or you think you would get by doing it.
Yeah, but it's a... I'm trying to create appetite in men to want to do the will of God.
Right.
You know, you remember in early days, Lem hadn't been saved, I don't know, he'd been saved 7 months or something. And he came and asked me to do a healing crusade. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
But he'd been living with Brandon. You know, all he knew was everywhere he went to Walmart, you pray for the sick, right? So I could have said, now, Lem, you need to. But it's like, yes, I'm going to give you a shot. Absolutely. So that creates appetite. So that there is something, discipleship in some ways is dignity, isn't it? It is trust. I trust you enough to give you a chance. So that is that's something, again, if you care about men. I personally, I can't speak for everybody, Corey, but I have no greater satisfaction than one of my men do well. That's how I look at it. It's not, hey, how did I look? When Lem came and he succeeded in that outreach, I was genuinely excited for him. Because that's fantastic. That's a great chance for development, right? So that's what I do. I believe in men. If I trained you, if I gave you instruction clearly enough to give you an opportunity, yep, you might not do the best. Somebody might be able to do it better. But, right, and this is one of the questions in an older church is, wait, we have experienced guys just sitting around. Why don't we let them do all the altar calls? Absolutely not. Because we're about training men. We're not about doing everything perfectly. That's the key.
So something like that situation would be more of a learning opportunity for that guy, because he might be prepared for like a small scale thing. It blows up, it gets big, and then then you could talk to him afterwards, and cause I know you've done that with me, and said, okay, what did you do?
Yeah.
And then.
Yeah. So what was it? Yeah, those are all learning experiences. So it's rare that it's ever disastrous.
Right.
And it can be, I mean, but I'm not discounting the fact that it could be, but it's rare that it's disastrous. I remember the first time you did the park outreach, what was it I told you? It was a small thing, but...
It was because I said, I'm going to pray with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so I mean, that's a real-life example. Isaac pulled the first altar call, and he... Usually guys may speak sometimes like they're not confident, and Isaac, he's a Solano, so he was like, I am going to pray for you. I am going to pray for you. Right? And so no one else would come and pray. And I said, maybe it would be it would have worked better if you'd have said, someone is going to pray with you. So, but that's minor. They got saved anyway, didn't they?
Right.
So that's a minor. He learned. So that was fine. And I said, you presented the gospel, you did what I told you in preaching the altar call, that one thing maybe would work better if you did it this way. And that's true for most. That's not because you did something wrong is not an indicator of your worth as a human being. That's the mistake we make, why we won't ask questions or why we won't receive instruction, is it? You know, you are a worthless human being because you said I instead of someone or we. That's not a worth issue. That's just a simple practical matter.
How do you get yourself in a situation to start receiving instruction and new responsibilities? Obviously ask questions, you know, have a willingness to learn. What are some other things that you could do if you want to, you know, start moving on up?
Well, I think probably, you know, yes, asking questions. And the second part of we read 1 Peter 5:5 is submit yourself to elders. So that means probably somebody more experienced will tell you something. How do you react when someone tells you something? So most of us, if you're a man, you probably have a certain element of pride, right? So most of us, somewhere in us, is a resistance to instructions. And so men don't ask for directions, right? We don't need no stinking maps, GPS. So that it begins that way. Hey, why'd you do that? What are you telling me that for? Huh? That's our natural.
Yeah.
That's often where it starts. So you can't, if you react to instruction by pride, then you can't learn anything else. So those are two starting points, I think. Receiving instruction, asking questions so you learn more is helpful. Yeah, good.
Would you say the opposite of micromanaging? Pastors have a problem with that. They don't even like you. You notice the little thing that Isaac did and you helped him on that some may not even be aware in pointing those kind of things out.
Yeah, sure.
And helping their disciple.
So what is the opposite of micromanaging?
Just not being involved and not caring.
So, but why? Well, yeah, not caring is laziness, isn't it? I don't want to be involved in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you need both. Yeah. Very good.